So, welcome to our 2025 topic for the year, which, as many of you know, is the Four Noble Truths. Today's Dhamma talk will be an overview of all four truths. Then, in the coming months, we will devote a month each to the first three Noble Truths, followed by a focus each month on one of the factors in the Eightfold Path. I was sick last week, so I wasn't able to hear Nana's talk, which I'm very sorry about. Let's start at the beginning. The Buddha saw during the night of his awakening how human beings get trapped in samsara, creating endless rounds of suffering for themselves and others. The Four Noble Truths show a way to break out of this habitual pattern, and this involves a way of seeing what is true instead of being trapped in delusion. This teaching of the Four Noble Truths is found in the Dhammakakappavattana Sutta and was the first sermon offered by the Buddha shortly after his awakening. It's said that this teaching set the wheel of the Dhamma turning. In the briefest summary of the Four Noble Truths, the Buddha said, there is suffering. That's the first Noble Truth. There is the origin of suffering. That's the second Noble Truth. There is the cessation of suffering. That's the third Noble Truth. And there is a way leading to the cessation of suffering. And that's the fourth Noble Truth. Theravada Buddhism, which is the Buddhism of our lineage, holds that this is the one sutta that contains all that is necessary for understanding the Dhamma and for enlightenment. All three Buddhist lineages, Theravada, which includes insight meditation, Mahayana, which includes Zen, and Vajrayana, which includes Tibetan, include the Four Noble Truths as their primary practice. As I was preparing this talk and thinking about the Four Noble Truths, I had a renewed appreciation of some aspects of the teachings that I may not have paid a lot of attention to before. It seems to be the way with the Buddhist teachings that once is not enough. It seems like there is always more to be revealed. As Longpur Sumedho, who is the most senior monk in our Thai forest tradition, said, practicing with the Four Noble Truths is not easy. It requires an ongoing attitude of vigilance and a lifetime of examination. But it's kind of puzzling because the truths themselves stated just seem so simple and so obvious. You know, there is suffering. Yeah, duh. But yet, these truths are not easy. So it's the way we practice with them that makes them so dynamic. The Buddha taught that a penetrative understanding was required in order to see things in their true nature, free of name and label. And this depth of understanding means that each of us has to be guided by the Buddha's Ahipassika directive to see for ourselves. And this kind of wisdom can only be developed fully through meditation. So this is not a matter of saying there is suffering. Yeah, no, it's not like that at all. Practicing with the Four Noble Truths requires patient and resolute investigation. We studied the paramis last year, and patience and resolve are two paramis. They're definitely needed for the Four Noble Truths. Longpur Sumedho and Philip Moffat, who is a senior teacher and a student of Longpur Sumedho, describe a process of practice that involves three phases for each of the Four Noble Truths. And this process is described in detail in Philip's book, Dancing with Life, which some of you may be familiar with, and we're definitely going to refer to it this year. Excuse me. The first phase is to recognize the truth, acknowledge that it exists, that it is true, but it requires reflection on the idea. So it's not just to say there is suffering, it's to reflect and contemplate there is suffering. There is suffering. There is suffering. We reflect on the idea, and then the second phase involves practicing with the truth in our daily life, moment to moment. We abide with it and notice the reactions, our reactions to it in our body, in our mind, and in our heart. This abiding with is one of the aspects that I paid more attention to this time around as I prepared my talk. Abiding with. What does that look like? What does that mean? The last phase is the result of one's practice. So we've spent time abiding with, we've penetrated the understanding of the truth, and now we experience the result of all that practice. One has the awareness that the truth has been fully seen, is fully known, and integrated into one's being. So today we'll take a look at all Four Noble Truths as we prepare for a year of investigation and seeing for ourselves. The first noble truth, there is this noble truth of suffering. The first thing we notice is that the truths are so simple and direct. There is this noble truth of suffering. But we have to acknowledge this as a truth and ask ourselves if we believe it. This one truth has kept many people away from Buddhism, including me at one time. I remember in my 20s when I was looking at religions and trying to understand the meaning of life, my friend and I were very interested in religions. I was studying Joseph Campbell and mythology, and I studied comparative religion in college. But we discounted Buddhism. No, it's all about suffering. Yeah, we're not interested in just something about suffering. So just moved on. When you actually start investigating, though, things become more interesting. Just asking the questions. The question in your daily life, is this suffering? Or realizing, this is suffering. One thing I noticed this time around is that the wording is impersonal. We're asked to reflect on the statement, there is suffering, not you suffer, not we suffer, not I suffer. We're not asked to identify with the suffering, just to witness the presence of suffering. It is a condition that exists, impersonal, imperfect, impermanent. Also, contemplating the existence of suffering touches the heart. Notice this and gives rise to compassion. And compassion is one of the two wings of the Dhamma. It connects us with all beings. This is something worth reflecting on. Everyone wants to be happy. All beings want to escape suffering. This is no small situation. When we spend time looking into suffering in an embodied way, we see that it is dynamic, more than unpleasant, uncomfortable, or painful. And this truth is not presented by the Buddha as dogma, a truth to be swallowed whole. We're asked to taste and see. The next thing I saw this time was how important it is to see this first noble truth in the context of the three other noble truths. Yes, there is suffering. And there is a cause of that suffering. And there is the cessation of that suffering. And there is a path. The Buddha said, he who sees dukkha, suffering, sees also the arising of dukkha, sees also the cessation of dukkha, sees also the path leading to the cessation of dukkha. So I realized that I wasn't keeping those all connected all the time. I would just start focusing on one aspect, but it's really a whole, it's really all one and not really meant to be isolated. In real time, before we have been practicing for years, before we reach the perfection of the end of the Eightfold Path, we can experience suffering arising and ceasing. It's very important to stay long enough to experience the ceasing. The Buddha and his disciples were described as ever smiling by contemporaries because understanding dukkha included understanding the cessation of dukkha. And in fact, here's another point I didn't pay enough attention to earlier. Of the five ascetics who heard the Buddha's first teaching, only one became enlightened during that sermon. That was Kondana. Kondana's insight was that all that is subject to arising is subject to ceasing. That enlightened him. When I use my perception and look out at the world, it seems like so many things are solid and fixed. Sure, a car just drove by. It was here a few seconds ago, and now it's out of sight. But it still exists somewhere out of my sight. My neighbor's house is still there. It's been in that same spot for 40 years that I've lived in my house. And sometimes when I'm in pain, it feels like the pain will always be here. But Kondana's insight was that all that is subject to arising is subject to ceasing. This year, for me, I want to investigate what makes things feel so solid and permanent and what obstructs the perception of the flow of arising and ceasing. Second noble truth. There is this noble truth of the origin of suffering. The origin of suffering is craving. Craving for sensual desires, for being, for non-being, or this is the one I like in Long Poor Sumedho's words, the craving for getting rid of. I'm a big one for the craving of getting rid of. Well, Pola Ruhula, in his book, What the Buddha Taught, also says the desire to accumulate more and more, grow more and more, and become more and more is a good way to look at craving. Longpo Sumedho makes a point of saying that this noble truth is all about desire, but not by desire by itself, but attachment to desire. The desire he describes is tanha, or thirst, which is like a craving. But the practice he advises is, and the practice that is advised is to let go of craving, let go of desire. But this letting go, is it an act of will? That's what I always think of. It's an act of will. I will let go of this thing. He says we're not taking a stand against desire. We are reflecting. Desire is like this. Desire feels like this. He explains that desire has power over us so long as we believe in it and react to it. That's attachment. If we can just allow desire to be the way it is, we are releasing desire. The mind and heart will feel the release around the desire. So how do we let go? We leave things as they are. We let them be. We don't throw them away. I remember a teacher, Narayana, once using her hand and saying, "This is letting go. This isn't letting go." I think sometimes the letting go has a lot of force with it, in my experience, for me. And I am noticed this time around that it's more allowing. And it reminds me of my teacher Rodney Smith's direction, do nothing. Do nothing. That's a way of letting go too. The second Noble Truth instruction is desire should be let go of, but who and what lets go? To me, that's a question to look at this year. Sometimes it seems like we just realize letting go has happened. Here's an example I remember from a few years ago. I was suffering a lot because I was helping a friend who was very ill, and he had to move out of his apartment. He wasn't well enough to go through his belongings, and he had nowhere to store them. So I offered my garage. Pretty soon my garage was full of his stuff. And it was very overwhelming to me because it was very disorganized. And I was just, what am I going to do with all this stuff? And I was afraid rats were going to get in the garage. And I just had all sorts of horrors of what would happen. He wasn't well enough to go through it or organize it. And I just couldn't stop thinking about it. You know, in my house, I have two closets and I make sure that they're not full. And I don't accumulate a lot of things. So this was really hard on me. But one day I noticed I was suffering and I just said, it's just a garage full of stuff. It's just a garage full of stuff. It's just a garage full of stuff. And one day it just didn't matter. That was 3 years ago. I still have this garage full of stuff and I rarely think about it. Longpour Sumedho says we have each have to find out for ourselves how letting go happens. And that's something I want to explore this year more deeply. I observed another example of clinging recently. I've had an idea for most of my life that the holidays must be special. This year, I saw that was suffering. So many expectations, things having to be just so, so much time spent preparing. This year I said, no, just take it easy. Just let it be the way it is. This year, easy will come first before perfect. My daughter and I had such a good time this year. I wasn't stressed. We could enjoy each other's company much more. And I saw how not having to make everything special meant that she didn't have to do so many things my way. And I didn't have to be critical of how she did things. We had our relationship was just great. I don't know why I was able to let go this year. It just seemed to make sense. Longpour Sumedho says you practice the state of leaving things alone and you stay with it until insight comes. The third noble truth. There is this noble truth of cessation of suffering. Cessation is the natural ending of any condition that has arisen. We allow that which has arisen to cease. Then what is left is peace. What I appreciate about this third noble truth this time around is that the emphasis seems to be on allowing rather than intense effort. In my mind, I kept thinking cessation as way down the road. But as with the others, I now see that we can have many experiences with each of these truths over the course of our practice life. We can realize the truth of cessation many times in small ways. We don't have to wait for one ultimate insight. But in order for us to be conscious of the cessation, we have to abide with the craving and suffering long enough for it to end naturally. For example, we have to stay with boredom as aversive as it is for a while to see its natural ending. If we are impatient or fearful or aversive, we can cut off the experience before its natural ending, and we will be missing a piece of the truth. Long Por Samedo says, as long as we don't allow things to cease, we just create new karma. The fourth noble truth, the way out. It is known as the middle way, the middle path, because it avoids the two extremes of searching for happiness through sense pleasures or searching for happiness through self-mortification or asceticism. And the Buddha discovered this path himself as a result of nearly dying as a result of his ascetic practices. He said, this path gives vision and knowledge, leads to calm, to insight, to enlightenment, to nibbana. Bhikkhu Bodhi says in his book, The Eightfold Path, that the Eightfold Path brings the Buddha's teachings to life. The path is composed of eight factors and three groups. Wise view and wise intention comprise the wisdom group. Wise speech, wise action, and wise livelihood comprise the moral discipline group. Wise effort, wise mindfulness, and wise concentration compose the concentration group. This path starts with the wisdom group. This is like the foundation upon which the path rests. However, the factors are not taken up one after the other in a sequence. They work together. Wise view provides a perspective for practice. We get in touch with a view that sees things as they really are, that understands selflessness, love, and nonviolence are to be extended to all beings. And wise intention provides a sense of direction. We get in touch with the intentions of renunciation, goodwill, and harmlessness. The moral discipline group develops harmlessness and responsibility through wise speech, wise action, wise livelihood. The concentration group develops a clear mind that has been concentrated and is free of disturbance and distraction as a result of wise effort, wise mindfulness, and wise concentration. Whether this is your first time studying the Four Noble Truths or your 50th time, I hope you will approach this year of practice with a fresh, don't-know mind, ready to be with things just as they are, ready to investigate what is true for yourself. So that concludes my overview of the Four Noble Truths. And I was thinking we could have breakout groups, and you could share an experience you have had with the arising of suffering and the cessation of it. Sometime in your life when you have, the arising and the cessation. Or you could share a learning experience you've had with one of the Eightfold Path factors, which is, you know, more our daily life experience. So you might, especially like wise speech, wise action, wise livelihood, wise effort, wise mindfulness, wise concentration, any experience you've had with the Noble Eightfold Path, just to begin to reflect on what's coming ahead and sharing those ideas. That was my thought. So if I'm going to put you in breakout groups, if you need to leave, this is the time to do it if you want to leave before the discussion. But of course, we encourage you to share in the discussion, and helps us really find out what people are thinking about the Four Noble Truths. And Judith has shared here, there's a website page for the yearly focus, and there are resources listed on that page. You can link to it from the Sunday morning page. So I want to share that with you too. Some of the resources I shared are on that resource page. Thank you, Judith. So I'm going to put you in breakout groups. Let's see how many people are here now. So welcome back, everyone, from your discussion groups. Charlotte, did you want to say anything more? Share anything? No? Okay. So if you'd like to share, you can raise your hand, your little yellow hand, or you just can wave and unmute yourself. Everybody's on the screen. So
I guess I would.
Okay.
When you were talking about recognizing suffering, I told the story of I had developed an unfortunate habit of picking up my iPhone in the middle of the night and going to Facebook and then spending an hour or two on there and then not getting the sleep. So I knew that wasn't a good habit. So a couple of nights ago, I said, no, I'm not going to do that. So I put my phone away from where I couldn't, excuse me, so I couldn't pick it up. And I still felt the impulses. And I just said, oh, that's the impulse. It'll pass. That's the impulse. And so I was able to leave it alone. And the last night, the phone was right next to me and the impulse came. I said, no, that's the impulse. And we laughed about my unhappiness with not falling asleep fast enough. I want to go to sleep now. I recognize that as suffering too. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing that. The arising and cessation. Yeah, that goes with Ajahn Sumedho's saying that it's not the desire so much. It's just allow it. Just allow it. That's what it is. That's what it is. And see how things cease. It's like be curious. Thanks. I like that example. Suze, go ahead.
Two takeaways from your talk that I loved. One was this time around, because I think that it's such a great invitation. And the second was, it's just a garage full of stuff. It's just, and it's still there.
Yeah.
Which I just love. Identified a lot with that. So just describing it, you weren't describing a problem. You were describing factually, it's just a garage full of stuff. The problem was how you decided to respond to it that then made it into a problem. And I love that distinction of fact and response to it. And when things become dukkha for us and our creating that. So big thanks.
Yeah, thank you for expressing that. Who else?
I'll say something.
Ira. Is that how you pronounce your name? Ira? Okay.
Actually, what Suze just said was interesting because with that garage, I thought it's an act of generosity, right? It's somebody else. You're doing somebody a favor by having all that there. So there was that element of it, which was different from a garage full of stuff that one has created for oneself in some way, right? You did something generous so that it seems like there's a whole other way that you're relating to that. That's not they're not your things. And also just to talk about our group, it was very lovely for the three of us, I thought. I appreciated our conversation.
Thank you for your appreciation. I'm sure your group appreciates that too. And thank you for that framing of the other way of looking at it. Yeah, interesting the way we frame things, isn't it? Anybody else? I've got a, is the Zoom user down here? I'm not sure who that is.
Probably Rosie.
Did you want to share?
It's Rosie.
It's Rosie. It's Rosie. Did you want to share, Rosie?
No.
No. Okay. So somebody else was moving their hand. It was Candace. Go ahead, Candace. And then somebody else? Did I hear another voice?
I think Judith.
Yeah.
Judith. Okay. Candace and Judith. Candace first.
I just wanted to thank you for reminding me of Narayan's letting go. This is not letting go. Oh, my gosh. That is the thing that I really need to remember. I think I can, I'm in charge, you know, and I'm going to do this. It's just so ridiculous. And the other thing I just wanted to say was that the big thing for me in the Four Noble Truths, when I was reading Philip Moffat for the first time, was realizing that it's all about grasping, and that it just somehow felt less horrific, my behavior. It was more like, oh yeah, I just want something that isn't here right now. And all I need to do is notice what's here right now and work with that and stop wanting something else. And it was such a huge revelation for me at the time. It still is. I still remind myself about that. So, yeah, I came into it thinking it was going to be kind of negative, and then it turned so positive for me. So reassuring.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Everyone shares is so nice. It's really nice to hear from people. Thank you, Judith. Go ahead.
I'm also very interested in the letting go part, because obviously there's a lot of dukkha that just stops because it's impermanent, right? And I never get to the point of really letting go of it. It just goes away. But there's some that just persists a lot longer than I want it to. And it would be really nice to be able to get better at letting go. You know, I mean, sometimes, and I remember Tewari saying, you can't force the mind to let go, but you just keep practicing and it'll just get worn out and it'll just do it, right? You just wear it down. And I guess I would really love to make that process faster, and I don't know. Sure that I can.
Thank you. Yeah, patience. I'm thinking about that was mentioned quite a bit by when I'm in my reading. Thank you, Judith. Julie, where are you? There you
right
are.
Here. Yeah.
I'm looking.
As I get my hand up. So thanks, Lauren, for the talk. It was really great, as always. I've said this so many times before. Well, there's a lot of things I say over and over and over again. One of them is just always cracks me up. Like you said, there's all these dumb moments with the Dhamma where like, yeah, but until you get it on a deeper level, like it doesn't stick when you need it there. You know, I mean, there are habitual way of dealing with life, you know, just takes over. But the other thing that I say over and over again, and I'm going to say it again right now, is for me, the just remembering self-compassion and remembering that when all the crap comes up, which it does, and when it feels super, super sticky, you know, and you've got these reactions to your reactions to your reactions, and they're just dragging you into this place, and you're so, like, you feel like you're drowning, and you're trying to get up, but you're trying to let it go, and it's not going to go. Just being nice to yourself and saying, yeah. This sucks. doesn't
right.
Somehow that makes the, you know, sometimes I feel like there's just a release in that process. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to share that. So
thank you, Julie. Always need to remember that. Thank you. Megan.
Hi. Yeah, I wanted to share, like, with our group, I really liked some of the stories you told about the stuff in the garage and the holidays, just being with your daughter and just kind of not controlling the situations, just letting it be. But I kind of have posted to the group that this is something I have trouble with. I've had moments, you know, or many moments of letting go and just being, and of course that release feels good. But at the same time, I also like need to plan things and have things to do. And then if I just let go so much, I feel a bit listless. And so it was just helpful talking it through with the group, and Suze and others kind of helped me realize that I was trying to jump ahead to the fourth of like, well, if I don't do that, then what do I do instead? What's the answer? And just like that reminder of just checking in moment to moment and not necessarily saying something's good or bad, but it's more, am I suffering? And like really experiencing that versus just trying to do the right thing, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, the suffering, is we learn in the suffering so much. And being with it, we learn.
Yeah.
I'm glad you had that experience. Yeah, it's great to share with people, and then we help each other, you know. Yeah. So it looks like it's time to close, and I appreciate everybody who came today and your sharing.